Coming to you from various places around the world, this is the Global Exhibitor Podcast, the podcast designed to help exhibitors succeed internationally.
Never be afraid to tell your story. Always be proud of who you are and tell that story. And tell it in a modern and cool and exciting way, but tell your story.
Your host for the Global Exhibitor Podcast is Jeff Hanna, a designer, entrepreneur, business strategist, industry thought leader, and student of world cultures based in the United States. Here's your host, Jeff Hanna.
Well, we're coming to you from on location in Singapore with Mr. Jeff Thatcher, who's founder and chief creative officer at Creative Principles. Jeff is quite distinguished in the industry and is known for his creative work around the world. But Jeff is also a colleague and a friend and an integral part of what we do at Exhibit Concepts, where he serves as creative director. He has a tremendous amount of truly world-class experience, and I've found him to be a brilliant thinker, writer, and a creative director. So I enjoy being able to watch him in action as he takes on a project from the formation of an idea and takes it into a completed immersive experience. These projects are most often about creating world-class experiences in corporate visitor centers, executive briefing centers, museums, theme parks, and live events. And Jeff believes that experiences are distinguished by great storytelling, which you'll hear him talk about in the interview. And Jeff has a passion for leadership development and believes that leadership is ultimately about creating an environment where great work can get done together. Jeff spent many years as executive creative director at The Brand Experience, which many of you will recognize that name, and recent projects included things like the grand opening of the Warner Brothers World Abu Dhabi, a traveling exhibition for King Abdullah Foundation in Saudi Arabia, a new lobby experience for Palo Alto Networks, and new concepts for an executive briefing program at Dell Technologies. Other highlights of his career include his work on the Pan American Games in Rio de Janeiro, the Kaiser Permanente Center for Total Health in Washington, D.C., the Lockheed Martin Space Experience Center, and Honeywell's Industrial Safety Customer Experience Center in Shanghai, and many other locations around the world. Jeff also served as creative director at the Tom Peters Company, where he worked with many top industry leaders and helped facilitate leadership training within Microsoft, John Deere, Deloitte, and the CIA. Yeah, that CIA. He also worked for more than 7 years as a writer with Jack Rouse and Associates, where he helped develop many experiences such as the CNN studio tour in Atlanta and the Battleship Missouri Memorial. I really enjoyed the conversation that we had in Singapore recently, and this is part two of that conversation. If you haven't yet listened to part one, please be sure to catch that part of the interview as well. I want to know where the experience economy is going. People are now getting on the bandwagon. They realize that experiences are important, whether it's in a trade show environment or a permanent kind of thing like an executive briefing center or an amusement park. They are all experiences, and we're realizing more and more how important experiences are. But where is it going?
A very good question. I think the experience economy will continue to evolve. It'll never go away. I mean, people love experiences, and technology will come and go. Some of the technology that's out there is amazing, virtual reality, augmented reality. I think last time I was at Infocom, it was a 0.9 mil LED. You can look out the window here and you can see massive video, outdoor LED screens. Those are an experience. You can walk down to the Apple Store and you can walk down to the Paragon Mall here in Singapore, and you can see a really cool experience where they're advertising Maseratis, and little kids, have little matchbox cars that they're running up and down the track. So, the experiences will always be there, and they always have.
where I believe experiences are going. And is this a change? I don't know if it is a change or not, but I think what people value today more than anything else is the authentic, is the real. And so I believe that experiences that celebrate and embrace authenticity and realness, rather than experiences that are manufactured and fake, are those experiences that will have more appeal. And, you know, earlier in my career, it was interesting. We worked on Kellogg's Cereal City, USA, a cereal attraction in downtown Battle Creek, Michigan, home of Kellogg's. And the reason why they were creating this attraction is because they had a factory tour of the Kellogg's cereal factory. And that factory tour, and I might get the numbers wrong, but if memory serves, the factory tour did about 400, 350,000 people a year, which as an attraction, those are pretty good numbers. You know, you get like 350, and it might have been 200 or 250. I can't remember the exact number, but it did pretty well as a factory tour.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime you're drawing over 200,000 people to an attraction, you know, as long as your investment levels are right, that's pretty good. You're going to make some pretty good money, right?
And sure.
Certainly cover your operating expenses. There are countless museums that would love, right, to have 200, 250,000 people a year attend their museum. And this factory tour was pretty simple. You just went and you watched cereal made. It's where they made cereal. It was a factory tour, right? And they closed the factory tour for a variety of reasons. I'm not even sure I understand all the reasons, but I think it had to do with liability, and it had to do with safety, and it had to do with, I think, worrying about, you know, people stealing trade secrets. I'm not sure exactly. But they closed the factory tour. And so the idea was, well, hey, we had, you know, 300,000 people go to the factory tour every year. Let's create a cereal attraction in downtown Battle Creek. We'll be able to draw 250, 300,000, or maybe if we make it cooler than the factory tour, we can draw 400,000 or 500,000 people. Wouldn't that be awesome? Right? So they invested in this amazing attraction, and it was cool. And it had a fake assembly line on it, you know, and it had the history of Kellogg's, and it had some really cool interactive exhibits that I'd worked on when I, you know, in my previous company where I worked. And the first year it did okay. I think it might have gotten 200,000 its first year, quickly fell off, and then they closed it because it was only drawing like 35,000, you know, people a year, and it shut down. So what's the lesson to learn from that? I think the lesson to learn from that is that people value authentic, real experiences.
Yeah.
They don't want to go to a fake factory tour.
No.
They want to go to the real factory tour.
That's the big problem I had the first time. Well, the only time I've gone to Hershey, Pennsylvania, to see the Hershey factory tour, and, you know, it wasn't the real thing. It was just a simulated, you know.
Well, I was going to ask you to bid on a project with me at Hershey's, but I guess now you can't because it's public.
Oh.
You're dissing Hershey's. I'm kidding. But no, it's okay. So, you know, now people would say Epcot is fake and manufactured. You know, why would you go to Epcot when you can go to Milan, or you can go to, you know, all these cities of Europe and things like that? And so, I get it to a certain degree. You're right. You know, the Italian pavilion, if you will, at Epcot is fake. You know, but you get to speak to real Italians when you're there, which is a nice touch, right? And you get to eat, you know, some great food, and that's something real that you can touch and you can hold. And you know what? I can't afford to fly to Italy, but I can afford to drive to Orlando. So you know what? But you ask where the experience economy is heading. And I think if you look at the research on millennials, and if you look at the research on the Y generation coming up, is they value authentic and real experiences. And so the more we can deliver experiences that are authentic and real, I think the more successful we'll be.
What's some of the advice that you could give to our clients, let's say, who are trying to reach their audiences either through an experience that we're creating or doing something at a trade show or an event, especially when they're working internationally? What are some pieces of advice that you would give our clients?
Never be afraid to tell your story. Always be proud of who you are. And tell that story, and tell it in a, you know, a modern and cool and exciting way, but tell your story. We're here in Singapore representing an American company that was founded 185 years ago. And there are some within this company that don't feel like that history is interesting to the audience here in Asia. Mm-hmm. And then I go and I interview a Malaysian sales executive, and I say, how do you start your pitch? And he's like, man, I start my pitch with a black and white, you know, illustration of the guy who founded this company 185 years ago. And I'm like, seriously? And he's like, yeah, I love that story, because my clients here love that story. And so here you have somebody who is here down in the trenches, who is telling that story proud. Mm-hmm. And I think if there's one advice I would give any client, is never be afraid to tell your story.
And has all of your traveling internationally changed you in some ways?
Well, that's an interesting question. Has it changed me? Well, sure. I'm not even sure I understand how exactly it's changed me. You know, again, I think if there's a theme of this podcast we're talking about today, it's the things we have in common. So if you ask me how my international travels have changed me, it's changed me by constantly reminding me, no matter where I go, how much we have in common as a human family. When I go to Dubai, for example, and I sit down next to an old pearl diver, and he pulls out these pearls and talks about his childhood and actually going out and pearl diving as a child in Dubai. And then I go to Laie on the north shore of Oahu and talk with a kapuna there about riding the sugarcane train and hopping on top of it and pulling off, you know, sugarcane and eating it raw as the train goes down. And then going to Rio and talking to street vendors, about their family and their stories. And then going to the UK and sitting on a train and talking with a World War II vet about stories. What brings all of these experiences together is people love stories. I mean, just today here in Singapore, went to church and sat with people that I have nothing in common with. But here we are telling stories. You know, I sat next to a father of six who told me some great stories about his children and about he was a ship captain. And, you know, when you look out onto the straits and you see all those ships, just hundreds and hundreds of ships waiting to queue up and to line in. And he was a captain of one of those ships. And he started telling me stories about his experiences as a captain. So how has my international travel changed me? It's constantly reminded me that no matter where you go in this world, people love to tell stories, and they all have great stories. And so that's how it's changed me, is it's constantly reminded me that we all love stories, and we all have great stories to tell, no matter where you go.
And you certainly do hear a lot of stories, because I've seen you in action over time, and you never meet a stranger.
I love it.
And whether we're in an airport or eating dinner somewhere or whatever, you end up in in a conversation, asking them questions like I'm asking you now.
Well, you can learn so much from people.
Absolutely. I mean, you have a genuine interest in people. Which
yeah. Well,
I do too. But I mean,
I'm a curious person, and so I, you know, I'm constantly wanting and to you know to learn more and. You know, I went in the other day, I skipped out on lunch, if you remember. So we were having lunch with the team at this Japanese restaurant in a in a small little mall over by the project. And I skipped out right towards the end of the dinner, and I ran over to this little chocolate shop because I had seen the chocolate guy in there working, and I kind of wanted to talk to him, and I wanted to buy chocolate.
I thought you just wanted to go in there because it was air conditioned.
Well, it was air conditioned, and it was comfortable, and it was nice.
Hot.
And I did want to buy chocolate because I did want to have something sweet for dessert. So guilty as charged on all accounts. But the best part of it was just simply talking to this chocolate confectioner, if you will. I don't think they're called a chocolate chef, but
yeah.
What they're called if you're a
chocolate.
And
he makes chocolate from
I mean, he makes it right there.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that was fascinating and great. And so that's how my international travels have changed me, is it's just opened my eyes to how many wonderful stories there are in this world.
Now, I was told recently by one of our colleagues, because I don't think you told me this yourself directly, that you're working on a book.
I am, yeah.
Can you talk about that?
So, yeah, I have written a book. The working title is Gordo at the Park.
Okay.
And it's based on my experiences as a teenager, and even as before that, as a kid, growing up, in a theme park. So when I was 5 years old, my parents moved from Bakersfield, California to Farmington, Utah, and we moved in less than a half a mile from the largest amusement park in Utah. In fact, it's advertised as the largest amusement park between Kansas City and the Sierra Nevadas, which is kind of interesting, but anyway.
That's quite specific.
It's very specific, right? Lagoon Amusement Park. It's a solid regional park. You know, when I worked there, it did about 1 million people a year, which is those are great numbers for a regional park. And I grew up as a kid going there. It was when I was a 8, 9, and 10 year old kid. You didn't have to pay to get in; you could just walk in. And then they had tickets and things like that. And then they had a swimming pool, not a water park. They had a swimming pool that was built in 1926. And I literally spent every day of my summer at that swimming pool and at the Penny Arcade. And on those lucky days when, this was before season passes, they didn't exist back then. Yeah. On those lucky days when my parents would give us some money, we would go ride the rides. So I literally grew up there. And then when I was 14, I got a job there as a cleanup boy in the swimming pool. And then I moved from a cleanup boy in the swimming pool to a lifeguard. And then I moved from a lifeguard to a train engineer. And then I moved from a train engineer to a manager in the rides department. And then I moved from that to a manager in the entertainment department and a stage manager of like 6 shows and 100 performers. And I was a substitute stuntman in the Wild West Shootout. And I was a zookeeper in the off season and worked the construction crew and worked in the sandblaster, and did pretty much, the only thing I didn't work on was food service.
Wow.
Over the course of 10 years.
Stuff.
And so I wrote a book about all those experiences. And to protect the innocent, the book takes place in the fictitious town called Lakeland, Kentucky. So rather than Lagoon in Farmington, Utah, we have Lakeland Park in Lakeland, Kentucky. And, I took a few liberties in combining some characters and things like that, but pretty much like 95% of the book are real stories and real things that happened to me. And it's meant to be humorous and fun and teach a lesson. And so I wrote the book about 10 years ago and have been sitting on it. And when I started my own company in July of 2018, I decided to immediately take the very small profits that I was making and send my book to a professional editor and have it edited. And so I just got the line edit back from my editor yesterday, in fact.
Okay.
I'm talking with a literary agent in New York, still trying to find out how I'm going to publish it. If nobody wants to publish it, I'll publish it myself. So it's called Gordo at the Park.
Our audience can be on the lookout for that
right
in the coming months. You travel extensively around the world like I do. I know your faith's important to you, and you try to make every effort to attend church services when you can. So can you talk a little bit about why that's important to you?
I love attending church all around the world. And I love, again, I do a lot of work in the Middle East, and I enjoy learning about other faiths as well. But why I love attending church around the world is three reasons. First, it connects me back to my home. It reminds me of my family that I miss desperately when I'm traveling. Two, it reminds me of the importance of just pausing for a moment in the hustle and bustle of our careers and reflecting on the weightier things of life and just pausing for a moment and allowing your spirit to refresh, if you will. And I think the third reason is I just love meeting people and the stories that you hear. I mean, I remember once I went to church in Dubai and I sat down and I said hello to the person next to me and I said, "Where are you from?" And he said, "Zimbabwe." And then I turned to my left and I said, "Where are you from?" And he said, "Brazil." And I patted the shoulder of the person in front of me and said, "Where are you from?" And he was from Finland. And then I turned around behind me and I asked the guy behind me where they were from. There was like three of them, and it was Italy, Uganda, and the Philippines.
Wow, that's
and
pretty diverse.
It's a very diverse. And the other thing I love about it is when you're at church, you're all equal. When you travel internationally, especially when you travel in the Middle East and Asia, you realize that there's a class system in this world. And you could argue, of course, that there's a class system in the United States, but you know what? I worked as a construction worker digging ditches earlier in my career.
So did I.
So, I've been there digging ditches.
Yeah.
I know what that's like to dig ditches. But with migrant workers in the Middle East and to a certain extent in Asia, there's a different class system.
Yes.
But when you go to church, you're all equal.
Mm-hmm.
And you're all human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important that we remind ourselves at least once a week that we're all human beings,
mm-hmm.
and we're all part of the same family. And that's a very important part to me, because it doesn't really matter if you're a security guard at a hotel in Dubai or a housekeeper in Dubai or a expat consultant working on experiences. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
None of that matters. You're all there to simply worship together as equals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very important thing to be reminded of as you travel internationally.
Yeah. That's good. Good food for thought.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for joining us on the Global Exhibitor Podcast. This has been part two of that conversation. If you haven't yet listened to part one, please be sure to catch that part of the interview as well.
We like to remind people that all business is conducted within the context of culture. So each episode provides insights to help marketers understand the cultures they're trying to reach and strategies for building bridges across cultural divides. If you like the Global Exhibitor podcast, please share it with others, subscribe to it, and rate it on iTunes. We greatly appreciate the feedback. Please also check out our website and blog at www.globalexhibitor.com. And finally, if you or someone you know would make an interesting guest on this podcast, please let us know by sending an email to guest@globalexhibitor.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.